Well, good morning, everybody. It is Friday, CGIF. Okay, thank goodness it is Friday, and especially that it's August 23rd, Friday, 2019. My name is Larry Jacobs, K-12 Education Talk Radio, and thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. We got two shows for you today, and this first one we're going to do is my old friends with COSIN. Okay, we've got several of my COSIN experts here. We're going to talk about ed tech. Back to school, the three essential tools for tech leaders for the new school year. It's going to be a nice show. And it goes, we got our, well, three old friends, Keith Kruger, who's the CEO of COSIN, Sue Bearden, who's the chief innovation officer over at COSIN, and Pete Just, who is the chief technology officer. Pete is out in Indianapolis, the Metropolitan School District of Wayne Township in Indianapolis, Indiana, where he works with a whole group of very excellent IT professionals and making sure that those kids have everything they need ed tech wise. So it's going to be a nice show. These essential tools that COSIN, by the way, COSIN's always coming up with this stuff. And I have an announcement that my guests probably don't even know this, but I talked to Sue Bowman yesterday over at COSIN, and COSIN is going to be putting a column into our magazine, Accessibility, Compliance, and Equity, AC&E, and they're going to do that each issue. And I can't wait for that. And it's going to be a lot of fun. And because COSIN, we're together on this. We've been together on a lot of things, but equity and accessibility and compliance to the law are key factors within COSIN. And so I'm so happy they're going to be part of what we're doing with AC&E Magazine. You can read the latest issue of AC&E over on its website at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. The magazine is digital. Our back-to-school issue is 90 pages, 40 pages of advertising, and a little more than that of editorial. It is absolutely excellent, if I do say so myself, and I do. So check it out and share it, ace-ed.org, accessibility, compliance, and equity. We like to call it AC&E. We're going to archive today's show at our website, which is education-talkradio.org. And sometime late today or tomorrow morning, we'll put a new schedule up on the website for next week. Every show we've ever done is over there. Just scroll down. You'll see them. They all have click-through links. And believe me, people listen. I still can't believe it. A lot of the old shows all the time. Okay, so it's really a lot of fun to see those shows just keep perking up and listening and all that sort of thing. We tweet at EduTalk Radio. We Facebook at EduTalk Radio. And for some reason, we link in at EduTalk Larry. Can't explain that, but we do. Okay, check it all out. Ace-ed.org and education-talkradio.org. And, of course, go over to COSIN.org, but you can listen to them talk right now. Let's start with the boss. Hi, Keith. How you doing?
Hey, Larry. Good to hear you.
Yeah, it's good to hear you too, my friend. I'm so glad we got this show together for you. Okay, and did I surprise you with the column thing? Did you know that? Did Susan tell you?
Suzanne? You surprise me all the time, Larry, with that particular thing we're excited about.
Well, I'm excited to have you, and thank you, guys. It's going to be great. Suzanne Bowman over there, thank you. Okay, Keith is the CEO of the law. How long have you been the CEO of COSIN? That's a good question. Never since I've known you. How long?
Yeah, well, COSIN's about 28 years, and I've been doing it about 25.
As CEO?
Long time. Yes.
Wow, Keith, that is a long time. Congratulations. I didn't realize it was that long. Congratulations, man. That's incredible. What a job.
I earned my reclining hair and gray hair.
That's reclining chair, not reclining hair. Okay? Seating hair. Okay?
All right.
And let me just jump on that one. Keith is no lazy boy. That's a terrible joke. Sorry.
Oh.
All right. Sorry. And another high energy. We'll just move on. He sees something else, Keith Kruger, everybody. Yes? Yes, Keith.
You are the car talk of Ed Talk.
Thank you, darling. I appreciate that. I really do. I really do. Thank you. That's a great compliment. Okay. Sue Bearden, are you there?
I sure am. Good morning.
She does not have a receding hairline. She does not have a receding hairline.
Okay. No, not yet.
Never. Come on. How you doing, Sue?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Excited to be here this morning.
I'm thrilled you're here. You're the chief innovation officer over there. Just real quick, what are you innovating?
Are doing all kinds of innovative things. We are working on the next edition of the Driving K-12 Innovation Series. advisory board is having discussions about what are going to be our top hurdlers and accelerators in our next report. And we have several events coming up this fall. We have our Large District Summit, which is coming up in October in Dallas, which is backed by popular demand. We had our launch at the COSIN conference. It was very well received. And we have some cybersecurity workshops coming up this year. This is a new event for COSIN. We have our first one in Chicago area on October 3rd. So we've got lots of stuff in the hopper at COSIN.
You do. You do. And it's COSIN.org, everybody, COSN. And what stuff they do is they are a leading association, leading experts. I'm going to say this without question, in education today, with ed tech being so important to what it is. This is the Technology Officers Association. And if I may segue from that to the Chief Technology Officer for the Metropolitan School District of Wayne Township in Indianapolis, Indiana, none other than Pete Just. How you doing, Pete?
Good, Larry. How are you today?
I'm fine. Welcome back, my friend. And by the way, I hate to have to cut you off if you tell me you're you're not a Colts fan more than a Patriots fan, are you, my team?
I'm afraid I'm very much more a Colts fan than a Patriots fan. So
hard to believe
apologies
that
to those in
our
New
interview
England.
With Pete today. Sorry about that. That concludes our interview with Pete. That was really great stuff. We can't wait to hear more. Welcome back, Pete. It's great. By the way, tell everybody, because it doesn't make sense unless they know it, the Metropolitan School District of Wayne Township in Indianapolis, Indiana. Is that Indianapolis Public Schools?
It's not. Indianapolis. So Indianapolis is really divided into 9 school districts around Indianapolis Public Schools, and we're one of those on the west side near the airport. So if you fly in, you're in Wayne Township, or if you're at the Speedway here for the 500 or the soon-to-be Brickyard, you're right next to Wayne Township.
Wow, there you go. And there's no Indianapolis Public Schools? Is that true, the way you said it?
No, there is. They're in Central. They're in the middle, and us 9 are around them.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
The Metropolitan. How many kids go there?
Close to 17,000 this year. Yeah, we've kind of had about a 3% increase ever since I've been here, and we're going from about 16,500 to about 16,800 right now.
That's good. That's good. And, just for fun, just today, since people know where you're coming from, besides the fact that you're, on the COSIN board, okay, tell people the demographics of your school district, just so they can understand the challenges you might face.
Yeah, we've got a great school district, really big community buy-in. Here on the west side of Indianapolis, we do have some challenges being an urban school district, and we handle those pretty well. But we are about 80% free and reduced lunch, and we have a number of those types of challenges that come with some poverty. But we've got a really great group of leaders, a really great group of teachers here, and we've found a lot of success. A lot of our students who are traditionally not going to graduate from high school graduate, and we've got multiple pathways for them to achieve that. So we're very proud of that.
And in an ed tech age, ed tech is going to be, as far as I'm concerned, the great equalizer. And they got the right guy there in charge of this. Kids are lucky. I do believe that. I do believe that. We don't have to constantly fight this battle. Ed tech is going to be the path in. Okay, and the kids love technology, so it's a win-win. You guys are right in the perfect place. Speaking of the perfect place, Keith, I just want to start with you. Just tell everybody about COSIN, but tell everybody about COSIN. You've been there. You just said it for 20, 25 years, okay? That's a long time now, okay? Although, we all know you started when you were 9 years old as CEO. It was a hereditary position when the former king died, okay? But what I want you to do, okay, talk about the importance of ed tech in school districts, but put it in 2019, 2020. Okay? Do that for everybody so they understand where we are.
And I think that over the 28 years the COSINs existed, the interesting thing is looking back and, you know, what were the cutting edge technologies in 1992 when we were founded, which, you know, if you were very cutting edge, you had a Discman where you put your music on, and you had the little technology that you could keep your schedule that was separate and
right, and you might have
big,
some computer point played Pong. Yeah. That 1992.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
On your big desktop. And all of those that
exactly.
functionality exists today, but it's in your pocket, you know, and it's a mobile. So you know, I think part of that is the functionality continues and but the tools change. And so how do we think about what's most innovation? And you know, one of the although we are a technology association, we firmly believe that the biggest challenge to using technology effectively are people. And that's not to say there aren't technical or technological problems. There are lots of those. But the biggest problem is us. And we do a lot of work helping leaders think about that, people like Pete and Susan, who used to be a CTO. You know, what are the skills that they need? Yeah. We also, you know, before we start talking about technology or innovation, we really need to start with the why. And I think Susan mentioned that we're doing a lot of work on our, it's kind of an annual series of reports called Driving K-12 Innovation. And she mentioned the first report is what hurdles are we trying to overcome? And I think that's a good way to think about as you start the new school year, avoiding the kind of rush to talk about the tools, the what I call the Best Buy conversation, you know, gee whiz, wow, we could do X, and start with what are we trying to solve? And that's important. I also think there's some good resources that COSIN has for this year from our IT leadership survey of kind of what are people like Pete. We nationally survey not just COSIN members, but all school districts, and we ask them what's their top priority. And, you know, there's no question that cybersecurity, Susan already mentioned some things we're doing in that area, has really risen on the focus of our audience. It, 3 years, it wasn't on the top three challenges up until 3 years ago, and 3 years ago it became our number three challenge. Last year it tied for number two. This year it's number one. So there's just no question that it is, you know, like I guess a bullet to your head, in that it is really a big challenge. I'm sure Pete can talk about that. And then I think some things in terms of the priorities, you know, budget of course continues and has been on the issue of big challenges for the number of years, and PD has been on for a number of years, and breaking down silos, and maybe we can get to that later, but yeah, so that's kind of a context of where I think
where we are,
you know, as we start the year, keeping those big issues in mind.
And we have to do that, and before we go, I go to Pete, I do want to ask him that, but Susan, I didn't know that. Where were you CTO? I just want to follow up on that. Susan?
I was actually I'm actually the tech director at an independent school in Melbourne, Florida. With about 850 students and two campuses.
Nice. I
was there for 8 years.
Wow. Congratulations. And now COSIN's chief innovation officer. That's excellent. Pete, your thoughts on what Keith just said? I mean, you have, besides being the chief operations technology officer, chair of the COSIN board, okay, you also have to run a school district at tech. What put your thoughts in with Keith.
Yeah, you know, I think that the things that are top of mind when we start the school year as chief technology or officers or tech directors is always to try to provide what those immediate needs are for the students and for the staff. Those resources, they have become very dependent on. We used to joke, you know, when the phones were down or when email was down, people said, thank you. and today, you know, if anything is down, it's a critical issue. They have to change lesson plans, right? And so so that really is, you know, as new students come in, obviously a school district that's more of an urban district has a lot of mobility. So we've got a lot of new students every year. And, of course, we're growing as well. So new login credentials, we need to be able to turn those around really quickly so those students can get to those resources. Of course, that requires a network, and so we will make sure that our network is updated and ready to go for that first day of school. All network services are ready. And then you know, in an age where we provide a lot of devices to students, we are a Google and a Chromebook oriented district, and so those Chromebooks have to get out as soon as possible. So teachers are very insistent that they get those quickly, and of course the way we do it, every student has to have their own. So that takes a while for a school district of almost 17,000 to get those out, but we typically get them out in the first week or two. So those are often top of mind for people like myself. How do we get that to happen? Some logistics, you know, some technical thing, but honestly, just like, much like Keith said, a lot of organizing of people and setting of expectations.
Yeah, and once you get that done, okay, and the New York Times had big articles on it this week. A number of cities in the U.S., you guys know this, with this ransomware. Okay,
yeah.
I read, I know some school districts have gone through this. I think a couple in Texas have gone through this. Pete, I'm just going to ask you, since you're feet on the ground, so to speak, is that a thought that comes to mind when you start your school year?
It's a thought we have all the
that
time.
Lunacy.
It's the thing that keeps us, you know, from sleeping sometimes. It's a very insidious problem, and it's very difficult to solve. And just like we were saying, it really is kind of teaching people not to click on things that are going to get them to a ransomware location or situation.
Talk about that. What would they not click on? You're talking to a lot of ed tech teachers, directors, but you're also talking today to a lot of teachers, okay? And they get stuff in their email, and the staff get stuff in their email. What shouldn't they – just talk about that. What shouldn't they click on? Maybe that's a good way to ask that, just as –
And a lot of us have started to realize the importance of teaching this, not just with posters, but also by actually phishing our staff. That's with a PH. And so the things that obviously they need to be aware of is just that a lot of times they're going to get emails specifically that are going to have bad links in them. They're intentionally being spammed, hoping that someone might maybe click on a link that will allow some malware or ransomware to be introduced into the network. And then that person can hopefully get some money. So, you know, those links can be easily kind of sniffed out by just hovering over that link and sort of seeing if it goes where you think it will. And if you don't know where it's going, don't click on it, is what we say.
Yeah. Yeah, boy, I hope everybody pays attention. That's easy to say. But stuff comes in, and now because they hack something like from your friend or something, or from like another teacher, they'll get their name, put it in, all of a sudden, to just be real, real careful out there. It's just nutty, okay, what's going on out there. And by the way, if that happens to your district, Pete, just make the check out to Keith and Larry. Okay? Keith, it's a company before. Okay, it's no problem whatsoever. Okay, we can cash it. Okay, and so let's talk about the resources you guys have. All right, in terms of this school year, we're going to talk about these three essential tools for tech leaders as you go back to school. Should I start with Susan? Susan, you want to talk about that first?
Sure. Sure. Well, speaking of cybersecurity, COSIN has a very robust cybersecurity initiative. If you go to our website, it's cosin.org/cybersecurity. You'll see we have a lot of resources for school districts looking to improve their cybersecurity posture. We have guidelines and it's sort of a matrix that you can do to sort of assess your district security posture and figure out kind of what are the next steps that we're going to take in order to improve. We have information about the impact of Internet of Things devices on school networks. And I know that coming up for this coming year, we're going to be releasing a series of short publications on building a cybersecurity program from the ground up. Like, what are the first steps you need to take? Because when you think about cybersecurity, it can be a huge, overwhelming problem. So where do you start? What are the first steps you can take? Sort of wherever you are kind of on the cybersecurity maturity model, what are steps that you can take to move your district forward? And then, of course, as I mentioned earlier, we have our upcoming cybersecurity workshops, which we are very excited about. Launched starting this fall in Chicago. So we recognize that this is a critically important topic for school district leaders.
It really is. Go ahead, please. Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to add on, from a policy perspective, I know you do many shows on E-rate. We're going to be releasing in the next week and filing with the Federal Communications Commission a new cost study on cybersecurity. We have been looking very carefully. Unfortunately, most of those costs that are new and growing are falling on school districts and are not covered by E-rate. Of course, you have to have them. And so that's a huge financial burden. And we will be, it happens that the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission, which oversees the E-rate, is asking for comments on the current category two program, a part of E-rate, which is internal connections. And we're going to be filing, answering their question of, you know, are there things that aren't covered that should be covered? And that's going to be, so watch for that. We also hope that
there's some disturbing
proposals by the FCC to cap the overall fund that includes E-rate, and we want school districts to go to our website and contact their member of Congress about it. So,
and why are they doing that? I'm just kind of curious about that. What's the point?
It's a very curious proposal, because E-rate already has a cap on it, as do the other programs under what's called universal service. But the FCC is saying maybe we should have a cap on the overall program, which would pit schools against healthcare facilities, against rural farms, and we think that's a terrible idea.
They also
have proposed combining the E-rate program with the rural healthcare hospital program. Again, we think a very misguided. So we would be competing for funds. Now, as you know, E-rate was modernized 2.5 years ago. We have a cap. We've been living under it. We're doing a great job with it. We're getting broadband and Wi-Fi. And now suddenly they want to throw us in the same pot with healthcare, which is growing exponentially and could easily create fiscal crisis in the near future.
Please get in touch with your congressman and do the Congress. I have to ask this: does Congress have sway over the FCC?
The FCC always listens to members, and in fact, we see this as a bipartisan issue. There are many Republican members who have large rural areas. Many, of course, all members of Congress have schools and libraries that received E-rate money, and they need to weigh in. And we need school districts to alert their members of Congress, especially those that happen to be on the oversight committee that oversees the FCC.
Yeah.
So if you go to our website,
cosin.org/advocacy,
it's all explained and it's really easy. You just, we have, you know, some template that you just plug in your zip code and it sends a message to your senators and your congresswoman. So.
Wow, and I hope that's very good. Please do that, everybody's cosin.org. Okay, that's really scary. I didn't realize that stuff was coming down the pike. And by the way, I always like to say, my good friend John Harrington, for E-rate, fundsforlearning.com, everybody. They're the great E-rate consultants and good friends of ours. Okay, John's a good buddy, and boy, do they do great work. And nobody works harder than John Harrington and his team. I got to tell you that right off the bat. Okay, and I mean that sincerely. All right. Anything else? Any other resources you want to talk about? Pete, you got anything to add?
Yeah, I think one of the things that that is becoming increasingly important, and I agree with everything that Keith and Susan's already mentioned in terms of some other critical things, but kind of as we start taking the long view at the rest of the year and really maybe our careers, interoperability is becoming
such
a significant and important
thing. We got a show coming up on that.
Thing.
Yep,
it's excellent. Interoperability is becoming important because we've got so many different digital tools that we're using, and they are starting to create a lot of data, and those data pieces are all in very separate silos. We need to be able to bring them together and to have some sort of a dashboard that makes sense of all of it, because teachers and administrators just don't have time nor the skill set to parse through all that data. So if we can put it in one place – We call that an operational data store, if you're geeky. And then you have the ability to really kind of get information from that or the digital resources themselves to be able to put them into a learning management system so that, you know, your teachers and students aren't having to go all over the web to find resources, so it's all in one place for them. That only happens with interoperability, and COSIN's got a great toolkit on that and with the cost calculator, understanding where you're at in a maturity cycle, case studies. We've got a lot that people can use in regard to that as you start thinking about the rest of the year and really the years to come. This is going to be a big deal.
Well, when you're buying stuff, you know, we got 400 exhibitors at ISTE. That's a good example, okay? 400 exhibitors, all the exhibitors at your conference, all right? What's the, Pete, I'm going to ask you this. What's the question? All these exhibitors call on school districts. They're calling on the ed tech director or the superintendent. What's the question that the ed tech director needs to ask to be sure that there's an interoperability factor in there? You know, you got 10, 20 companies coming in. Where do you go?
There are standards, so you just need to say, are you interoperability standard compliant? And if they say, what do you mean, then you can start drilling down into the details. But that's the first question. Are you interoperability standards compliant, and how do you interpret that? Because a lot of them will say, yes, because they're salespeople. They may not even know what you just asked them.
I got to stop you. I go through that all the time because when we're selling advertising space in the magazine, I always say to people, how do you feel about equity? And they, that's our number one thing. But then when I drill down and I ask them what they're actually doing, some of them look at me like deer in the headlights, okay? And I tell them they have to rethink before they can come in the magazine. And it's the same thing, okay, with this. You know, I'm a sales guy too, all right? But you got to be careful, okay? You can't just say yes, okay? And then you can't just accept that yes. You got to drill down further. Okay. Pete, let me ask you a question. Of the vendors who pop in to see you, how many of them are interoperability compatible, ready, whatever?
Well, you know, I would say we're probably at a point where maybe half of them will be pretty compliant. And, you know, obviously we've got data compliance, on the, and that would be EdFi for us. And then there's, you know, digital content compliant, and that's going to be more of an IMS global compliance standard. And when you get down into the details, down into the weeds, though, there is still some work to be done, even when they say yes. So the real question is, how well do you work on trying to be increasingly compliant with the standards? Because the standards change, so they may be compliant with LTI 1.0, but no one's really trying to use that too much anymore. So do they keep up with their compliance to the newest, latest, greatest standards? And that's what you really get into when you have a conversation that goes a little deeper. And usually you have to bring in some sort of a system engineer or someone that knows a little bit more. I don't expect the salesperson to know the details down in the weeds.
But they do need to know what's going on. And Susan, let me ask you this, because you're, again, Chief Innovation Officer. Tell people, and I know you do, how COSIN works with the vendors to make sure that the vendors understand exactly what the CTOs need. Okay, and that's key. You know, it's a lot deeper than just a sales pitch. Okay, it's this kind of stuff. And how do you dive deep with the vendors, if in fact you do, Susan?
Actually, I'm going to defer to Keith on this one. Keith, how would you answer that question? Because our focus is really more on the tech leaders. We have many vendors who are members of COSIN and who are sponsor partners. So, Keith?
They're all good companies. They're all good companies. I don't mean to imply that. We know them all. Okay? That's not my point.
Yeah. I think it's a great question, Larry. And for most professional associations, their mindset is the companies are out in the exhibit hall and the educational sessions are happening elsewhere. And that's not our mindset at COSIN and hasn't been
for
a quarter of a century. We very much think that now it requires companies to take off their sales and hat and really have a thoughtful conversation. And so all the work we do, whether it's on cybersecurity or privacy or digital equity, we ask our corporate partners to sit at the table and help us come up. And actually, the companies keep each other honest in terms of saying, you know, there's more than one way to solve some of these problems.
And right.
We want to provide, COSIN attempts to provide vendor neutral resources, and that is good for the whole, it's certainly good for our educator audience like Pete. It's also great for companies because they can start the conversation by saying, we're not saying this, COSIN says you should do it, and here's how our solution or product solves it. So, you know, we integrally, we have over 135 companies that provide solutions to school systems on technology. We just ask that they not think of us as a trade show, but to think of us as a key customer conversation and really focus on thought leadership. And honestly, most of the people working in companies are former educators, and they understand
that.
And so, you know, they're really full partners. We avoid the word vendor. We think they are partners in this work. And we have really created, I think, an ethos of it would be a terrible thing, I think, to just put all the Peets of the world in one room and talk about innovation in the future. And not that he's a bad person and not that any of those people are wrong, but without knowing what's really happening in the private sector, what do they have in the pipeline? So if we want to have a thoughtful conversation about innovation and change, we all have to work. We have to move it out of being just the transactional conversation to one
that's right.
strategic.
And your point was well taken. Most of the folks who are working with the vendors, a great deal of them are ex-educators. They're going into this knowing what educators need. All right. And and I don't know any companies that are, let me say it the other way. All the companies I know are pretty darn good companies. Okay. But it really is important, and it's incumbent upon them to know what their customers need and be sure that their products are up to it. So the salespeople should be able to answer your questions, and don't be scared to ask those questions, everybody out there, because it's just key stuff. Okay, it's that simple, and Pete certainly knows. And Keith, well, have you ever put all the Peets into one room? What happens when that happens?
Yeah. Good luck with that.
All the Peets.
But even like our board of directors is 15-member board. We have three corporate seats that represent the corporate community. While they're from an individual company, their goal is to represent
for that side of the table and that side of the equation and bringing that up there. And that's simple. And actually, we have to end soon, but I wanted to ask this question. You know, the key to successful leadership, you wrote this, is relationships. Okay. And this is what you're actually talking about here. Okay. Talk about the relation of relationships with the technological leader, not only to the vendors, but also, and this is key, Pete, and you can talk about this if you want. We have about 5 minutes left. Okay. The relationship to the whole, to the entire school district, because you can't sit in an ivory tower. Well, you can, but it's not going to work out for you. So, Keith, you start, and Pete, you jump in. Susan,
I'll start the first relationship that the CTO absolutely has to do is understand, where their superintendent and what is taking and what the vision and leadership is. And we've worked in partnership with AASA, the Superintendents Association, and created kind of a whole suite of robust resources. In most districts, the superintendent isn't the head of technology, but they have to understand where we're going. So that relationship up is critical. The relationship, though, is also horizontal, and that is obviously with curriculum. And, you know, about 40-45% of our heads of technology have an education degree or background. And so that comes kind of naturally to that audience, but there's also another 40% or so that have more technical backgrounds. So helping them to have credibility and work with curriculum. And increasingly, we're building a new toolkit that'll come out at the end of the year or early 2020 with the business officials, ASBO.
Good.
You know, you have to work with your finance department, and
that's
we're going to, you know, show kind of tips of how you make that work, because increasingly technology is a big line item. And unless you have standing next to the CTO, the business office, you just don't get these. And all these issues like cybersecurity and protection of data and contracting of interoperability have to be done shoulder to shoulder with the business officers.
They do indeed. And you said ASBO, it's the Association of School Business Officers. It's an acronym. That was Keith, was it? Was that Keith? That was Keith speaking, right?
That was Keith. But yeah. I bet Keith has some ideas.
Yeah, I agree 100% with Keith. And
thank you, Pete.
Frankly, frankly, you know, it really needs to be something that we're teaching to those who are kind of coming into the profession as well, because a lot of times we do think, you know, as entry-level people, that it's all about the technology. And I'm actually going to be together a week from now with 10 new technology leaders here in the state of Indiana.
Oh, nice.
It's kind of a mentoring program we have. Yeah. And one of the things we give them is a book on 360-degree leadership, how they need to lead, obviously anyone that reports to them, but they also need to lead their peers, and they need to lead their superintendent or school board. They just don't know enough to be able to make decisions at that level of superintendent or school board. We have to help them with that. And so being able to do that, setting expectations for what's coming, and then, you know, working with our peers, the principals out in the schools, helping them know, you know, when a parent comes to them, when a teacher comes to them on a technology issue, you know, what are the things to say? What are the talking points that they should have in their back pocket? Because a lot of times, you know, we've got great administrators, but technology and how to work with people in regard to technology is not necessarily taught to them as they're working on their administrative license. So we really need to be able to help them. And when we're helping people understand the technology and how to answer questions in regard to it, then we really help to promote this digital transformation that we're in the middle of.
Yeah, and I'd like just to piggyback on what Keith and Pete said. When I was a technology leader, I found literally that I would say about 80% of the problems that I had to deal with were actually not technical, but they were in some way people-related. It was either a communications issue, or it was a training issue, or it was a relationship issue. It was always about the relationships with people. So I agree that building those relationships and realizing that, you know, tech departments are there to serve the school districts and the teachers and the administrators that they're working for and the students, and recognizing that that's an important role that we are, our job.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.